What is God's purpose for marriage? How should we respond when traditional marriage is openly mocked as irrelevant? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Your Marriage by God's Design. It's written by Issues, Etc. regular guests Scott and Julie Stiegemeier. You can find out more about Your Marriage by God's Design at issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your Marriage by God's Design, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month.
As a proud Catholic, I've never really cared much for atheists. If you're turning your back on God's Christian teachings, then at least have the courage to call yourself a Lutheran.
While individuals have their own religious beliefs and consciences, businesses that employ thousands of hardworking Americans do not.
Hobby Lobby is a family-owned business that doesn't want Washington to be their boss. They believe that abortion takes the life of a child and that every child deserves a chance at life. What's wrong with that?
This fuzzy postmodern sentiment, you know, that intentions matter more than outcomes.
Chaplain deployed to Washington, D.C. absolutely love Issues, Etc.
I'm not much of a celebrity watcher, but I think I was vaguely conscious of the fact that Gwyneth Paltrow, who I always confuse with other blonde, tall celebrities, but I was vaguely aware that Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin of Coldplay were married. At least I believe them to be married. I think that they are. It's hard to tell celebrities. Sometimes they live together for decades. They have families without being married. But in their case, they were. Now, to hear that they were going to get a divorce, no one wants to see anybody else get a divorce. It just now they are separating amicably, and that's really all they're doing, it appears, is separating. They're calling it a conscious uncoupling. I don't know what that is. Is it another name for divorce? Is it another name for separation? Is it a third thing that is neither divorce nor separation? Where does the idea come from? We're going to be talking about the conscious uncoupling of Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin. It may be something that catches on with the celebrity cast or even with the rest of us. A little bit later on Issues, Etc., we'll talk about Joseph the Patriarch with Professor Jeffrey Pulse. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is his Issues, Etc., coming to you live this Friday afternoon. It's the 28th of March. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversations with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris and Professor Jeffrey Pulse, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us. We'll talk about World Vision's change of heart on the issue of gay marriage. And then we're going to play Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week. Four soundbites we've lined up for you to listen to and then vote on. All you got to do is listen, and then you give us a call, send us an email, a tweet, or go to our Facebook fan page, and your vote decides which one of the four soundbites will be Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week live this Friday afternoon. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or you can vote in advance for Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris joins us to talk about this thing called conscious uncoupling. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Good to be back with you.
Well, we've long been witnessing the attempt, both legally and culturally, to redefine marriage. Are we witnessing here perhaps an attempt to redefine divorce?
It looks like it to me, you know. It looks like it to me that they, what they want to do is to say, well, we still love each other, but it's not working anymore, and so we want to be separated. And so we're consciously uncoupling, and therefore we'll be better co-parents, you know. And they've got that on the website there. It's called Goop is the website. They've got this long, extended discursive narrative from a couple of doctors, it looks like, going on and on about how this is really a good and more realistic thing to plan for impermanence, because after all, back in Paleolithic times, people only lived to be about 45 anyway, and so till death do us part, it wasn't as complicated as it is today. And I'm just thinking, the poor children in this household, what are they going to do to these poor kids?
Yeah, I mean, how do you explain to little Apple and I think one of them is Moses. Mommy and Daddy aren't getting a divorce. We're consciously uncoupling.
Right. You know what? I mean, it's the sort of thing, it's the whole adult-centric view of marriage, you know, and the whole adult-centric idea that, you know, sex is basically a recreational activity. It's a sterile activity. We had these children by choice. Now we choose to be separated from one another, and the children will be fine with it. The children, of course, have to be fine with it, because if the children weren't fine with it, that would impose some demands upon us as adults. And the last thing any self-respecting adult in Western society wants to do is to accept constraints or demands on them and to accept them as morally legitimate. And that's, I think, that's the root of what we're seeing here, Todd, in my opinion.
It's part of the problem, and I've read this elsewhere, critics of the conscious uncoupling idea, is that it's based in an idea of marriage as I get to retain my autonomy, I get to retain all my kind of freedom of movement and of choice and all of those things that I had as if I were single and yet have all the benefits of marriage.
Yeah, it's a married singles lifestyle, you know, and let me say that phrase again, the married singles lifestyle. You captured it perfectly. It's like two people who happen to be living together and who have certain privileges with respect to one another, but no real constraints, you know. And so the idea that two people would come together and not lose their identity, not lose their autonomy, but nonetheless be willing to invest themselves into the common enterprise of building the family, that's what's absent. You know, and people sometimes have the idea, I want to just be a little bit careful here, of what the contrasting set is, you know. If I don't completely retain my autonomy, then it means that I completely lose myself inside marriage, and that is supposedly what has always happened to women in marriage, and that's why we have to get rid of that. You know, but those aren't the only two choices. That's the thing. Those are not the only two choices. The other choice that we don't seem to be talking about is to see the marriage as a common social good where the man and the woman come together to jointly collaborate in creating something that's different and bigger from either of them, bigger than either of them, more important than either of them, and to which they're both committed. You don't lose yourself by doing that. You become more yourself than ever when you really do that. And giving 100% is a way to become yourself. And that's what's lost in all the discussion. You know, we know when we look at Jesus as our model, he really fulfilled himself by giving completely of himself. And we know that if we follow Jesus, we don't lose ourselves by following Jesus. And, you know, there's all that paradoxical rhetoric in the New Testament about, you know, you lose yourself, you find yourself, and all of that. But what Christians know from their walk with the Lord is that as you follow Jesus, you really become more yourself than ever. You become who you were really meant to be. You become the most individual, and everything that's unique and special and wonderful about you becomes enhanced by following Jesus. And the same thing can happen inside marriage, but people falsely, incorrectly contrast it with this idea of continuing to be 100% yourself, which just turns out to mean self-assertion, you know, and self-indulgence. And that's not really the whole self. That's the problem with the whole formulation.
Selena's listening on her cell. Selena, thanks for waiting on the line.
Hi. No, I was listening about the coupling part, and whenever I think of coupling, I think of train cars being coupled up for the length of the train, and that they just uncouple them and move them around and switch from one place to the other. So if you're thinking of a marriage in that situation, it's not marriage. It's just, you know, who am I hooked up with today?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, she's right about that, and that's where we're headed. You know, once we lose the idea of marriage as a permanent lifelong union, you know, then the coupling and uncoupling can happen more or less at will. And of course, as we've talked about many times, a lot of the developments are coming up in family law, in part to accommodate same-sex couples, are things that have been in the law in certain ways, you know, for some time. That is, the business of the law is to give adults what they want. That's the point of family law. That's the point of divorce. That's the point of this whole idea here. of conscious uncoupling. We give the adults what they want. The idea that the law should exist to do justice to children, that idea is completely lost. And if you looked at it from that perspective, you would know that that permanence is an essential feature of genuine marriage.
In that vein, Jennifer, Gwyneth Paltrow, Chris Martin are both superstars in their own right. They're both fabulously wealthy. They have enough money to pay lawyers to sort out the details of what conscious uncoupling will mean for them financially,
yep,
in terms of their property. They can pay a bevy of lawyers to take care of that and to make sure that everything gets all neatly tied up in a bow. Do they have enough money, enough resources to insulate their children from what they are doing, which is breaking up?
I don't see how they can. You know, that's not a problem that money can solve. You know, that the rejection of your parents for each other. Let me put it to you this way, Todd: the stability of your parents' bond and the quality of your parents' bond, that is the foundation of a person's life. That's a foundation of a person's personality. And if that's not there, if it's broken, if it's damaged, you can't easily repair that. And, you know, we can, there's a whole variety of ways that we can see that. You know, for example, you can look at the studies that look at the impact of divorce on children, and you can see that having more money solves a lot of problems, but it doesn't solve all the problems. Regardless of income, children of divorce have a hard time. You know, you can't buy your way out of the kind of problems that we're talking about here. And so, but what is important about the point you make is that they can pay their way out of a lot of problems, but the culture that they're part of, the culture they're creating, the culture of impermanence, as that trickles down to lower and lower income people are not going to be able to buy their way out of it. They're going to have more and more problems that are going to be harder and harder and more devastating the farther down you get into the socioeconomic realm. And so that's the real irresponsibility, I think, of the upper classes in this culture, is that the sexual revolutionaries have always been largely concentrated among the rich and the powerful, and they really don't much care what the consequences are for the poor and the weak.
Do you think it does have a tendency, it has proven to have a tendency to trickle down, that is, the celebrity culture that allows them, because of the abundance of resources and really just the complete detachment from any social stigma, he's famous, we love him, we love their movies, who cares what they do, that permits them to, with perhaps less friction, couple, uncouple, switch around, pair off, stop pairing off, all of the things that we watch celebrities do year in, year out. Does that trickle down to people who aren't celebrities?
You know, it's hard to say exactly what the influences are, what the direct causes are. So, in other words, we have this phenomenon you're talking about of the celebrities of the culture setting a certain kind of example, setting a certain kind of tone for what's considered cool. We've got all that going on. And at the same time, we have changes in the legal structure. That is, how does the law treat divorce? How does the law treat permanence? How does the law treat children and custody and property and all those kinds of things? How does the law treat those things? How do my next door neighbors treat me? How does my mom treat me? All those things are working, are separate kinds of influence, and yet they're working together. And so whether it's just the celebrities influencing people in the lower classes saying, oh, gee, I don't really need to take this seriously, or whether it's all of these other things all working together, it's hard to say. But it is certainly the case at this point that the elites of our culture, of both political parties, whether they're elites of political, economic, celebrity, sports, whatever it might be, the elites in this culture are pretty firmly in agreement with the main outlines of the sexual revolution, and that the problems that the sexual revolution causes are pretty deeply concentrated at the lower ends of the socioeconomic ladder. And I think that's something that should give everybody some pause, really. It's a very elitist setup, and people need to be calling it into question, I think.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You can find out more about the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thanks for being our guest.
You're very welcome, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about Joseph the Patriarch. The church will be remembering him. He gets a lot of space in the book of Genesis, 14 whole chapters. Church remembers him on the 31st of March, and remember him on this Friday afternoon, March the 28th. Joseph the Patriarch with Professor Jeffrey Pulse, right after this. What is God's purpose for marriage? How should we respond when traditional marriage is openly mocked as irrelevant? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Your Marriage by God's Design. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guests Scott and Julie Stiegemeyer. You can find out more about Your Marriage by God's Design at issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your Marriage by God's Design, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler, pastor, or teacher? Would you like to be equipped to teach more effectively? Join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Find the conference schedule recently posted at ccle.org. Discover the education that is our Lutheran heritage, ccle.org.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.